Welcome to the politicalbetting.com polling matters show. My name is Kieran Pedley, and here we are in Tip TV's brand spanking new studios in Victoria, and we're all very excited about that. In the next sort of half an hour or so, we're going to be talking about the EU referendum campaign. Now, there's just about a month to go until Brits go to the polls to decide whether to remain in the European Union or leave. And it feels like the polling is becoming more and more frequent every day. But how can we make sense of it? And what state is the campaign in at the moment? Some commentators have said that Leave is falling behind, but should we pay any attention to that, or is that just spin from the Remain campaign? We'll also be looking at the wider political implications beyond June and what happens next in terms of the Conservative leadership campaign, which will surely begin in earnest and lead to a new Prime Minister at some point in this Parliament. To unpick some of these issues, I'm joined by Matt Singh from Number Cruncher Politics. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, Kieran.
And as ever, Mike Smithson from politicalbetting.com. Mike, welcome. So, chaps, let's dive straight into the polling. I think that, Matt, we've got a slide that you've produced looking at a sort of polling average, which is time series from last September. A relatively flat race, it seems, although narrowed slightly around the start of the year, but the evidence seems to be that, you know, Remain is going in the right direction, at least from their perspective. But we'll come on to some of the detail behind that. Certainly it's interesting that the don't knows seem to be declining as we get closer to polling day. It'll be interesting to see if that continues. But really it's remarkable that it's been quite a flat race all in, all things being told. But Mike, I'll come to you first today. That isn't necessarily the full story when we look at the opinion polls, is it? I mean, if we look at the next chart, we've got a list of the recent opinion polls that have been produced, which I know is something that you keep a track of. And there still is this difference between telephone and online polling, isn't there?
Yes, I try in the chart to sort of highlight phone and online. And if you look down, you'll see that there is a very, very different picture emerging. Where you have the green Remain figure, you flick it over across the phone, and you see that almost all the phone polls have Remain with a very sizable lead. Or a comfortable lead, whereas the online polls have it much, much closer. In fact, the last two ones at the top of the page, both YouGov and ICM, have both got it at 50-50, which is very, very, very tight. So it is a question of really at the end of the day is which of these two methodologies have got it right, and there's a huge argument going on in the polling industry.
And the assumption that many make is that it must be phone, but of course we'll come to that in a moment in terms of whether that's actually true, because there is obviously, as you mentioned, is a big debate there. I suppose, Matt, to bring you in, welcome back to the show. You've been on a few times, not in these surroundings potentially, but you do a lot of work on forecasting and sort of taking the polls in their totality and trying to understand what they're saying, and you've built a model or a forecast using for the EU referendum. Maybe spend a couple of minutes explaining the work that you're doing and what you've found.
Sure. Well, the first thing to do is to take the polls that are out there, which, as Mike points out, are very, very different, and correct for what we call the house effect, so the systematic differences that you get between different pollsters. Over and above, I mean, phone and online is the big difference here, but even between individual pollsters you get some quite sizable differences. So the first step is to correct each poll for its house effect, which is sort of normalised to a weighted average of all polls. And then from there, the next step is to estimate what true public opinion is. So the polling average that you see on the left of the chart is simply what the polls say. And that's weighted to a point midway between phone and online. So at the moment, that gives about a six-point lead to Remain. From the work that I and others have done on phone versus online, which I think we can come on to in a moment, I'm not sure the exact figure is really at the midpoint. It might be a little bit closer to what phone polls are saying. So adjusting for that, and then some technical things like the fact that most polls don't include Northern Ireland, which, as we saw from the Lucid Talk poll earlier, is a lot more towards Remain than Great Britain is. And that sort of gets to our estimate of where opinion is now. And then in terms of turning that into the forecast, which you see on the right, which is the probability distribution of the Remain vote, so the vertical line in the middle is the 50%, the winning line, and then the distribution of the outcomes around that. In order to do that, I've gone back and looked at historical referendums in different countries and different contexts, and tried to analyse what statistically you would expect to happen in this sort of situation. Now, the most likely outcome in a referendum situation is that the status quo outperforms as you get closer to polling day. From 1 month out, you typically expect a swing of about 2 or 2.5% towards the status quo as the most likely outcome. But that part is the key. There are a range of outcomes that are possible. The ones closer to that are statistically the most likely, but with a month to go and the bulk of the campaigning to be done, anything could happen.
So your projection at the moment is sort of centering on Remain 56.6,
yep.
Leave 43.4.
Yep.
I'll bring Mike in at this stage. What do you think about that projection, Mike?
It seems reasonably right. I mean, I think the Northern Ireland factor, which Matt's had identified, that really adds about 0.7% to the Remain lead, and I think that feels right given the numbers we're getting. The thing at the moment, of course, is that we are getting many more phone polls than we were getting online polls, which is a situation completely reverses what it has been until mid-April.
And I wonder whether that sort of phenomenon is maybe sort of clouding some people's judgment in terms of the dynamics on the race. I want to come onto a recent headline in the Daily Telegraph where they jumped on the findings from an ORB poll. Good this week, I didn't call it the OBR like I did last time, but an ORB poll. And there was a lot of people jumping on this and saying that this shows how Leave is losing. But before we get to that, I mean, I think there is a sense that when there was only really online polls out, there was a period where there was 9 out of 10 polls in a row that were online. There was this sense that it was neck and neck, and now suddenly we've got all these phone polls. Suddenly people feel that the polling might be moving away from the Leave campaign. But let's look at some of these numbers from this ORB poll, because we did have a Daily Telegraph front page splash saying older voters turn backs on Brexit, which obviously is a big sort of message in the campaign. And the reason for this was that their overall numbers showed Remain on 55 and Leave on 42 among those certain to vote, so obviously clearly a large lead. But the reason for the headline was that they found 40% of Conservatives saying they would vote Leave, which was down from 60 in March, which was down 20 points. And in addition, 52% of the over 65s backing Remain versus 34% in March. Now, what that seems to be suggesting is that Conservatives are turning away from Leave, as are the sort of older voters, and we know they're so important because we know they're more likely to show up. However, this is based on sample sizes of around sort of 260 or so for the Conservative vote and 186 for the sort of 65s and over. So there is a risk, Matt, isn't there, that we're placing far too much importance on cross breaks, yep, within an opinion poll where we know that the variation can be greater. I mean, what's your perception of this?
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, you mentioned the sample size already, and obviously sample sizes that small will have substantial margins of error. These are big enough moves that they're probably outside those margins of error. But in addition to that, you have to take into account the way that polls are constructed these days. The way that they're weighted is that they're weighted so that the sample as a whole is representative of Great Britain. That doesn't necessarily follow that every crossbreak within that is representative. So, for example, over 65s may have too many Conservatives one time, too few another time. It might have, you know, all sorts of different things can vary. So looking at crossbreaks can be quite misleading at times.
But I think if you have to put it in the context of the range of polls out there. On the Conservative supporters, the thing that I found very interesting in the past week is that I think of the 7 polls, in 6 of them, Leave has not been ahead amongst Conservatives. YouGov had them ahead. And in 5 of those polls, Remain has had a lead amongst Conservative voters. And that is significant because, you know, cross breaks from one poll on their own, not that reliable. But from 5, you think that there might be something there. Mm. And on the older age group, which is enormously important, we had Ipsos Mori last week and trailing this particular notion that older voters might be turning back to turning to Remain, and that which ORB have found. Now that I think sort of because last week when the Ipsos Mori came out, people were dismissing the poll because that was so ludicrous. I mean, nobody else had found it. Well, now another poll has found it. It's sort of...
So it's a weight of evidence.
I am still very, very sceptical about that number.
I think Opinion found it as well. So it's not just phone polls. It's a range of modes that seem to
Opinion, I think, did they find it with the over 65s?
We'll have to check that. I think it was Conservatives they found rather than over 65, yeah.
I mean, what do we put that down to? Because I suppose the interesting dynamic with the older voters, other than they are more likely to show up, is that you could make an argument for why they would go Leave, being maybe, dare I say, more old-fashioned, more conservative, maybe more anti-immigration. But you could also make an argument for why they might be Remain, because they're risk-averse. I mean, is there any particular event or reason why we think they would have turned against Brexit at this stage?
I think there is. We saw in the Scottish referendum that the older you were, the least likely you were to want change, and that was well documented. It's always seemed odd that the older voters were, the narrative was that they were very much for change. And I've always felt that maybe as we get closer and as the prospect and all the sort of thing that Project Fear produces, one new lot of economists one day or one international body the next, I think they're sowing the seeds of doubt. Mm. And I think when it comes down to it, it becomes much harder to tick your box, tick the box about leaving this this thing of which we remember.
And the government's obviously in the driving seat in terms of driving that agenda with the Bank of England and with the IMF and so forth. I mean, Matt, in terms of your forecasting, you've looked at the balance of probabilities of Remain and Leave. I mean, it seems to be from this chart here that your model is picking up that the probability of Brexit is declining.
Yes, I mean, there are a couple of things. So in the original chart, you saw that there was a slight move in the polls towards Remain. It's not a particularly big move, but the probability is incredibly sensitive to what the polls do. And additionally, as we get closer to the event, it's only 4 weeks or so to go, the chances of a surprise happening reduce. So even if you kept the polls steady, the chance of Brexit would decline. That said, it is still, it's not nothing. I mean, this is not over yet. There is still time for something to happen and for Leave to turn things around. So while Remain is favourite, it's certainly not over yet.
But let's move on. There's some polling that ICM have conducted that I want to sort of bring to everyone's attention. Without peering behind the curtain too much, it's probably fair to say that most online pollsters will use an omnibus survey or some kind of omnibus survey, or at least quota sampling, to produce their opinion polls. And Martin Boone from ICM has produced some really interesting analysis which has suggested that there is almost a bias or a sort of consequence of the nature in which his surveys are conducted that has led him to think that the Leave side might be overstated. So to sort of put some flesh onto that, you know, if you say in your survey that you want a certain number of over 65 to make the poll nationally representative, historically they haven't worried too much about who those over 65s are. I mean, I think you were mentioning this earlier, Matt, and how quickly they sort of fill in the survey. And that's quite important because it means that if the over 65s that are being surveyed online aren't representative, maybe are sort of expected to have a, or understood to have a sort of pro-UKIP bias maybe, then that could have implications for the headline figures. I just want to read out something that ICM have said and get your reaction. So ICM have said, we believe it likely that the weight of interviews generated before 9 p.m. on a Friday has the effect of consolidating a Leave lead as a result of the survey process itself. Demographic quota cells fill up and close, once the target number has been hit. If a specific cell, such as 65-plus men, is filled early with people disproportionately likely to support Leave, no additional 65-plus-year-old men will subsequently be allowed to do the survey. As a result, interviews of 65-plus men are unlikely to be politically or attitudinally representative of all such men, even though in demographic terms they are identical. But they are not, and their presence possibly introduces a small skew in favour of Leave, in brackets, UKIP, depending on the question looked at. And that was something that ICM mentioned this week. I mean, Mike, your reaction to those comments?
I thought it was the most insightful thing I've heard about online polling in a very long time. because nobody's really ever been able to explain before why online pollsters always seem to be having much bigger figures for UKIP than the phone pollsters. And the idea that those who are passionate UKIPers, passionate leavers, that as soon as the email comes through, would you like to participate in a poll, they act and react very quickly, and others are perhaps more slowly or doing other things. That sort of makes sense. And Martin had some interesting data. In fact, that always when this omnibus goes out, responses in the first 4 hours are always pro-leave, but then in the next 2 days of response coming back in, then it becomes much more to remain. And that is actually very, very significant, and I think we've really got to raise question marks against all online polling. And I should say, after I did something on my website last night about this, another leading pollster called me and we got talking, and I said, well, you know, what can you confirm this? And he said, yes, absolutely, this happens in all the online polls that you do. It's you get this immediate flood of responses, and they have various terms to describe it.
I mean, Matt, I'll bring you in. I mean, is this unique to online polling, though? Because it feels like it goes back to the heart of the BPC polling inquiry that we obviously were both sort of involved in and followed very closely. There is this issue with people that are engaged in the political process, conducting surveys. I mean, you know, ICM have a clear view online, but on the telephone too. You know, the people that you get that answer the phone quickly or you can get to easily are maybe more likely to be a certain type of demographic than others. I think the British Election Study sort of face-to-face survey showed that, you know, the people that would answer the door first would skew Labour, to coin a phrase, whereas, you know, if you continued going back and making sure that you were getting to people that were hard to reach, then that Conservative vote sort of boosted somewhat. So to what extent do you think this is an online problem, or do you think it's a wider problem the polling industry has to deal with more generally?
Well, I think we should be clear that even though this seems to affect multiple online pollsters, it doesn't affect all of them. It's to do with the details of the way that they draw their samples. But I think what it does reflect, there's always been a bit of a suspicion that this gap between phone and online in terms of UKIP share was something to do with the samples. I think in the general election result, they were off in opposite directions by about the same amount on average. But there are broader issues of political engagement and self-selection. And let's not forget that telephone polls, compared with the 90s when you used to get probability survey type response rates of, you know, 50% plus, you now get response rates in the single digits in a lot of cases. And in that situation, you are no longer dealing with a random sample. There is an element of self-selection there. I mean, you're still reaching out to people rather than them signing up to something, but there is still an element of non-randomness in that. It seems to affect phone and online in different ways, as this sort of thing shows, but I think the problem that Martin Boone is describing is a very interesting one, and it's great that someone's finally been able to actually pinpoint hard evidence of what seems to be going on.
But it doesn't seem to get to explain the whole issue of the difference between phone and online, because even when he made some adjustments, I think it made his poll 50-50 as opposed to 52-48 in the favour of Leave. So certainly it's getting closer to the telephone polls, but nowhere near in a way, because telephone still has this huge lead for the Remain side, doesn't it?
One of the differences between telephone and online is that online you get an email inviting you to take part and you do it in your time. Whereas phone, what happens is you just get a phone call out of the blue, and they'll do a couple of screening questions, and you're asked if you'd like to take part in the survey, and you've got no control over the timing. And I think that has the impact. You're not getting the, you know, you are seeing that with the those who immediately, when they get invited to take part in an online poll, will do it immediately.
Well, it'll certainly be interesting to see whether the online and telephone polls coalesce around a similar answer as we get closer to polling day, as they did at the general election. I don't think anyone's suggesting that they're going to end up in an identical place. That would certainly be
very, very surprising if that was to be the case. But maybe we'll end up in a situation where telephone says 58-42 and online says 54-46 and the result's somewhere in the middle and everyone can go home happy. We'll see. But I want to spend the last sort of 5 minutes or so talking about some of the implications of the EU referendum. Life will go on afterwards, believe it or not. And it does seem, Mike, that the knives have been out for David Cameron. I mean, there's a Daily Mail front page with that very headline, which seems to suggest that there are people in his own backbenches who are very upset at the prospect of losing and maybe kind of want to get their revenge one way or another after the vote. And it's hard to say what exactly will happen and to what extent this is briefing by disgruntled people on the Leave side. But there seems to be something in this, doesn't there? Because if you look at Ipsos Mori's political monitor, David Cameron's support or satisfaction rating amongst Conservative voters is declining. So maybe the Conservative Party is falling out of love with David Cameron a little bit.
I think so. It's a bit like the way that Labour got out of love with Tony Blair. Cameron has been amazing for them. He's won two referendums, Scotland and the AV referendum. He's effectively won two general elections. He brought the party back to power after a long period of Labour in power. Mm. But somehow he is vulnerable. And I think my reading is that if the Brexit referendum is very close, then I think that he is in trouble. If the referendum is more than say 7-8% lead for Remain, then he should be okay. And the question then is, what would happen? I think there is a very strong view in Westminster that the next Tory leader will be a Brexiter, and the most prominent one of those is obviously Boris Johnson. Mm.
Let's look at some of the odds briefly. Just sorry to interrupt, but let's look at some of the odds out there at the moment for the next Conservative leader. I think we've got a slide looking at that. One of the things that strikes me on this issue about who the next Tory leader is going to be is how just fluid the situation is. I mean, every time Conservative Home do a poll, it seems to be somebody different is at the top of it, doesn't it? I mean, Matt, we were talking off air about this, weren't we? How trustworthy, I mean, not that we say there's anything dishonest about it, but how trustworthy should we find polls like the Con Home polls? Because that seems to be what people are using to take the temperature of the Tory grassroots, doesn't it?
Well, you can't blame them because there isn't much else to go on at the moment. I think it's interesting when you see surveys like this that Con Home are doing, and Labour lists were doing the same sort of thing for the Labour leadership election. And obviously they are self-selecting and not weighted. Con Home obviously got it right last time, which was 10 years ago. Maybe things are still the same. They'll be able to, the surveys that they're getting now are representative, maybe not. Is opinion in the Tory grassroots as volatile as it suggests with a different person at the top each time? Perhaps not, but it doesn't mean that they're not nevertheless a useful guide.
Mm. I suppose we have to bear in mind the way that the Conservative leader is actually chosen, though,
yes.
Of course, because I mean, this slide that the viewers can see, which I'll read out for the listeners, looks at the probabilities rather than a poll. But it has Boris Johnson 18, George Osborne 15, Theresa May 13, Michael Gove 10, and then Priti Patel, Stephen Crabb and Sajid Javid are all in single digits.
That's betting. That's betting.
Yeah, that's betting. So that's where the market's saying rather than polling. So it seems to be, that seems to be backing up this idea that it's quite a sort of fluid race. But ultimately, it's not going to be seven or eight candidates that go to the membership, Mike, is it? It's going to be two. And how do you see the dynamics of that race going?
Well, it's reckoned that George Osborne has created a group of MPs who will support him, and he will probably, it's hard to see him not getting to the final two. Then the question is who he would be up against, and obviously Boris would be deemed to be favourite for that. But there's now lots of talk about who will be the best Brexiter to stop Boris. Mm. One of the names that's been in the frame, which John Mentel has been talking about, and I've been writing about, is Andrea Leadsom, who's a former economic secretary to the Treasury. Who is a powerful, dynamic, woman who's fearless, and I can see she's very much the Maggie mould, and you could see that she would go well, the party would like her.
But the cynic in me suggests that George Osborne would quite like her as well, because if you've got this situation where there's quite a split between a number of candidates vying to face him, then he ends up looking like the experienced, sort of safe pair of hands candidate, then that's how he becomes Prime Minister. I mean, maybe we're writing him off too, not saying that you are personally, but maybe that people that are writing off George Osborne are writing him off too quickly.
Well, he's, you know, he's renowned to be one of the great political operators. And he's sort of, over the years, he's built up this fantastic level of sort of support within the parliamentary party. Mm. And Boris has got to get through that before he can get to the members. And I think if Boris went to the members, probably he would win it. But would he make the final two? Remember, in the 2001 race, Michael Portillo was by far and away the favourite. And he was blindingly obvious. He was the best person for the Conservative Party. What happened? There was a sort of fix. And so that Ian Duncan Smith was there as a sort of stop Michael Portillo. He got to the final two facing Ken Clark, who, because of his views on Europe, was completely always going to be a non-starter when facing the members. And what happened was the Tories got to Ian Duncan Smith. They have to get rid of him 2 years later.
Mm. And I suppose about when we're looking at forecasting or trying to predict what's going to happen in the future, it's very difficult with situations like the Conservative leadership because fundamentally the drivers of that are members of Parliament rather than the public, and we can't really model that using local elections or what's gone before, can we?
No, exactly. I mean, it's a very different kettle of fish to the Labour leadership race, where as long as you're confident someone would get 35 nominations, which Jeremy Corbyn ultimately did, the question is then modelling the membership, which is still not easy in polling and forecasting terms, but at least it's something where you can do a poll. With the Conservatives, you really have to understand the ins and outs and the internal politics of the parliamentary party, which makes it a very different proposition.
Mm. Well, lots to chew over, certainly, as we go into the final month of the EU referendum campaign and look ahead to who's going to be the next Prime Minister. Mike Smithson and Matt Singh, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, that's all we've got time for this week's Political Betting Polling Matters show, back in the flesh in front of the television screens. Stay tuned for more episodes in the coming weeks where we'll be looking how the polls are changing as we approach polling day, and also revisit the United States and who might be the running mates for Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.